Hi everyone, you are listening to the Accents podcast on WUKY. I'm your host, Katerina Stoikova, and this episode has been brought to you by Accents Publishing, an independent press for brilliant voices. Let's welcome today's guest, all the way from Cincinnati, the author of Incidental Pollen, poet Ellen Austin Lee. Hi, Ellen. Welcome to Accents.
Hi, Katerina. I'm so happy that and honored that you asked me to come and talk to you today.
Oh, Ellen, honor is mine, and I have very high praise for your new book. There is so
Thank you.
much emotion in it. It will be very difficult to write this in any other genre but poetry.
I agree. I think that's one of the reasons I found myself in poetry. You saying that made me think about how poetry works so well for me, at least at this point in my writing. You know, you're able, at least I'm able to articulate difficult things, kind of go in and out. Put one piece down and move back out. Put another piece down and move back out.
From the book description, incidental pollen refers to pollen that collects on bees as they forage for nectar, like the cumulative life experiences we cannot help but carry. And to me,
Yes.
that is deeply allegorical book.
Yes. My husband's a beekeeper. And I am currently an apprentice beekeeper because he would like to move away from doing the work. And kind of in the process of learning about bees, I came upon that term, incidental pollen. Apiologists use it to describe, that's scientists who study bees. They use that term to refer to the pollen that collects on bees, as you just read from the book description, as they forage for nectar. So the pollen collects on their bodies and they bring it back to the hive. So it just struck me as such a perfect metaphor for what happens throughout our lives. The experiences that we that happen to us and that just are part of our lives that we can't help but carry and become part of who we are. I felt that it really tied together a lot of the work that's in the book.
Can you please read us Wild Hive?
That is one of the first bee poems I ever wrote. Yeah, I wrote that in a workshop when the idea was to use as much sound in a poem as we could muster in a short period of time. And this poem came out really fully formed. And I really was writing towards the last lines, which you'll hear. And that's a quote from my husband, the beekeeper. So I'll read this now. Wild Hive. A rumble summoned my husband last spring to rescue a beehive. He found it hung like a tongue, abuzz with hunger, urgent hooligans hunkering around a honeyed crux. He clipped the bunch cluster, curried the tree branch, and dumped it into a hovel. He had three hives at the beginning of winter, but only the mind line survived this time. He thinks there's something in being wild that keeps things alive.
That is so beautiful. Well, I really liked your poem, The Gauntlet, which takes us on a huge journey. And I don't want to give away the ending. Maybe you can read it to us. But to me, it is kind of like, okay, well, here we are, and then we're about to make the next step. Do you want to read it?
Yeah, that I mean, to me, that's the perfect segue really into this poem. And the thing that I like to say before I read this is that, of course, as with anything with a poet, it's the word choice is intentional, but it's we in this poem because I'm not alone in this journey. So it's called The Gauntlet. Once our world was a field of undetonated mines, probable explosions when our feet swung over morning's edge, clods of mud raining, stuck in the muck. Once every mammal was predator, fanged and clawed. We wrestled wild animals, moved in slow motion, each clash stopped. Then replayed in technicolor splashes. Once we carved our arms with sharp knives, blood scores, a tally of stripes to feed the deep hole in our souls. Earth people shake their heads. Don't get the rattle. We had long since switched water for Beaujolais, wild turkey, or bitter hops. Once we called the magician behind the counter our savior of the corner liquor store. Our skin, once the ashtray of extinguished cigarettes, cognac, elegant elixir, dexedrine, slimming smarts. Our bodies dwindled, our thoughts soared until they didn't. Once we were the dregs, the drags, the dreaded, scraped dog shit from a shoe. That was us once, before we passed through the smoke-filled gauntlet and pulled our aluminum folding chairs into a circle.
A lot of important things happen in a circle.
That's for sure. You know, the funny thing is that, the gauntlet like that has so many has a few different meanings in that poem, but I think the inspiration literally came from like one night walking into a meeting, and you almost always are walking through this outside like gauntlet of smokers who are just smoking cigarette after cigarette because you can't smoke inside.
Gauntlet has different meaning throughout the book also, and that was one of the questions that I had, which is about medical jargon. And what does gauntlet mean in medical jargon?
In one of my poems, I use the term gauntlet because I worked for many years in a burn unit, and we would wear what were called gauntlets. I honestly haven't been in the burn unit field in so long that I don't know if they still do it this way, but we'd wear disposable aprons over our uniform, and also these shoulder length plastic disposable gloves, and then another pair of gloves over those for dexterity. But that was so we're completely covered. In the burn unit, the children would be inside, the big burns would be inside these plastic enclosed tents. And we would deliver our care from outside the bubble, so to speak. We'd reach our arms inside this like little pocket, and where the top half of the curtain would meet the lower half, and that's how we would do all our care.
That kind of work is not for everyone.
It's not, I honestly don't know if I could do it now, but when I did it, I was in my 20s to early 30s, and it was before I had children. I loved it at the time. I mean, not that I loved anyone suffering in, but I was good at it. I was good at taking care of these children, and there's something really intense about knowing that you're having an immediate impact on someone's quality of life. Like I knew I could make it better for that child I was taking care of that night. And there's really nothing like that. It's like
Well,
another kind of high, really.
under stress, does the training take over emotions?
Yes, it's really common in high stress service jobs, whether it be it nursing, medicine, EMTs, any work of that nature, fire. I'm sure we all develop this kind of like gallows humor. I think there's a lot of humor that happens in those kinds of settings, which sounds really bizarre, but I mean, if you can't lighten things up to get through, then you can't. You just can't do it.
There is the humor, but there is also cynicism. Does it make people cynical sometimes?
Yeah, I can tell you that I left I've left jobs when that started taking over. Like I left the burn unit when there was a changeover, and this was a million years ago, so I can say this now, but this was in early 1990s that I left that work. There was a changeover in the medical staff, and the care standards changed in a way that made many of us really uncomfortable. So you start to believe, you start to realize that people don't necessarily have the best, their egos sometimes are more important than the care delivery for the children, or in my case it was pediatrics, but that can be with adults also. So you're always going to run into people like that. Then it's time to change. If you can't make the change in the system, then you can change where you are.
Poet Marianne Peel has a poem about a stressful situation in her life in a refugee camp. She worked at a refugee camp in Turkey, and there she was a witness to a lot of pain. Her translator one day took her by the hand and showed Marianne hers, the translator's crying place. She had a designated place where she would go and cry when it gets to be too much. Is there a similar thing with doctors and nurses? I mean, basically, there is it's stressful, it's tragic sometimes. What happens?
Well, we would usually go to the bar after work, if I'm going to be quite frank.
That's what I want. So
That's usually what happened. We'd go, I mean, it's not, of course, many of us were drinking, but it's not even necessarily that that's what it was. It's more the camaraderie. You didn't necessarily have to have drinks in front of you. Like, I'm pretty sure there are people that weren't, but it was very important to have peers that you're sharing the experience with. Very important. And the other part is, and you can't minimize this, is that you know that the small things that you're doing well are making a difference,
Yes.
and that is what gets you through.
The electricity of life, the whoosh of life in or out of the body by physically holding body parts together. You write about that, you describe it. I've never read that anywhere else.
Really? Okay. That's part of the intensity of it. I mean, that's something that I'll always that I do. I think you're referring to the poem Wound City Diptych. I really actually end that poem with how, I carry that. I basically it, metaphorically I describe how that's such a part of me that will never go away. There are these things that I witnessed that somehow spiritually so profound and uplifting in a way, like just realizing with certainty, witnessing someone die and knowing them when they were still alive, and then seeing their body right after they die, you see that there really is a spirit that leaves
Yeah.
a body, and it's profound.
The spirit that leaves the body, and I'm also referring to your other poem about having a flashback to being woken up by a dream in which the spirit enters your womb and you know that you're pregnant.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, now I know what you mean.
Yeah. So
Yes.
I'm referring to these poems
Yes.
because collectively they made me feel something that no other poetry book has, to the degree between spirit and flesh that I think it's amazing.
Oh, thank you for noticing that. That was another profound experience. That was when I can, the speaker of the poem is me, as many of my poems are, at least at this point. That was kind of a backwards reflection in realizing that I remembered this night, this morning, I should say more accurately, where I woke up, and what woke me was this sensation, it was very strong sensation that something had entered me and it woke me up, it startled me awake. And then to realize like a month or so later that I was pregnant, and to think back on it, I was like, that's what happened. I really believe that with every part of my being is I knew it.
Why wouldn't you believe it? It happened to you and you
It
felt it.
did. It did. I guess it's just, it's one of those profound experiences that stays with you that you can't help but take notice of. And that's one of the things that I really love about writing and writing poetry specifically, is there is a place to put that. And it's so moving for me to hear that another person, a reader, you in this case, saw that and somehow connected with it.
I not only saw it, I felt it.
That's so wonderful. You can't help but think that other people have had these experiences.
What are nurse bees? You have a poem about that.
Well, I'll read the poem first and then I'll say something about it after. So it's titled Nurses. Nurse bees are a special breed of workers hatched by some unknown alchemy into nurturing roles. They feed the needy bees bread, honey, and pollen mixed with royal jelly secreted by their own bodies. Nurses visit often, examine larvae deprived of food, give more to those who signal the most distress. Nurse sisters, duty-bound by nature to sweeten even futile feedings. We dripped water with a straw through parched lips, blue on father's face to coax a swallow, inspected skin for breakdown. Turn, turn, turn. We held hands, listened for breath's dying gasp. Well, as you can probably hear, there's a little parallelism going on here. Nurse bees are a kind of bee in the beehive. I mean, they're worker bees, and worker bees kind of have different roles. And there are a group of bees that are termed nurse bees, and they do exactly what's described in the whole first stanza. They take care of the larvae in the hive. And it was in reading about the hive and the different roles that I just was so excited and kind of blown away by the parallels between the bee colony's organization, the way they take care of one another, and the way humans do in a different way. But so in this, the human counterpart in the second stanza, in this specific instance, the nurse sisters are myself and one of my sisters, who also happens to be a nurse. So, and you don't need to know any of this, I hope, to appreciate the poem. But so, I mean, I think it kind of it alludes to kind of the way nurses are in general, like the whole duty bound by nature. I think there is a certain type of person that wants to do this kind of work. So we are certainly used to taking care of people that physically that need to be cared for. And in this case, we are taking care of my father, who was in his last few weeks of life, dying in a hospice bed in our living room.
Oh, that's a privilege too.
Yes, it really was.
And the book is dedicated to him.
Yes. It's dedicated to him and to my nephew, Jeffrey, who was killed in a car accident 3 weeks after we buried my father, which was just, those were the first big losses in my family. So I'd say they had an enormous impact on me, all of us, really. I'm from a pretty close family, so I think that it really, the proximity of their deaths. I mean, my father had what one could call a beautiful death. I mean, he was 93, he died at home. As far as I know, he wasn't in pain. He didn't appear to be, but it was old age. I won't tell you all the precipitating details, but he slipped into unconsciousness and took him 3 weeks to die because he was in such tremendous physical shape. So he died peacefully at home with us taking care of him. And then to contrast that with 3 weeks later, a young, healthy guy at the beginning of his life to be killed in a car accident. It was just too much, you know.
Would you kindly read us several poems, some of your favorites from the book?
Okay, it's really hard to say a favorite because honestly, it depends upon my mood. But it seems like I should read Lost Palindrome because I just talked about the night my father died. The last time I looked into your eyes, they were pools unspilled, deep on a late December night, soft yellow light through the living room into shadows, lit the deathbed, our beloved father. None of us knew you would soon follow him as the great stag passed into the dark. The sweep of loss. As the great stag passed into the dark, you would soon follow him. None of us knew. Our beloved father lit the deathbed through the living room into shadows, soft yellow light deep on a late December night. They were pools unspilled the last time I looked into your eyes. The you in that poem is my nephew, and that's the last time I saw him.
Can I request Portrait in Green, which is another palindrome?
Oh, yes. This is speaking of the nursing thing. This is one of those abiding memories I kind of mentioned earlier. This happened really early on, and I was actually training to be a nurse when this happened. I was doing my psych rotation, so in a psychiatric ward. And this was in Massachusetts at this place. It's since closed down, called Mass Mental. Massachusetts Mental. We'd call it Mass Mental. But it was a very powerful experience, so I'll just go ahead and read it. Portrait in Green. I've kept this green scrap of construction paper, the edges frayed after a lifetime. My portrait, drawn with a child's tool, into an aging woman wearing dirty sweats in the hallway of a psychiatric ward, I turned, me, a nurse in training. She grabbed my arm, silent, pointed. She chose the evergreen crayon. Without lifting it from the page, the woman scribbled in this remarkable likeness, my impression in green, the lines vanishing between genius and insanity. Between genius and insanity, my impression in green. The lines vanishing in this remarkable likeness from the page. The woman scribbled the evergreen crayon without lifting it, silent, pointed. She chose me, a nurse in training. She grabbed my arm in the hallway of a psychiatric ward. I turned into an aging woman wearing dirty sweats, my portrait drawn with a child's tool. Paper. The edges frayed after a lifetime. I've kept this green scrap of construction. It was amazing. I mean, she literally just handed it to me, and it was so striking. I hung it on my dorm room door at college. And, I felt like this is Ellen's room. So.
It could be used as a cover for a poetry book.
It would if I could find it. I know it's in the storage room somewhere, and I've looked through a couple boxes. I think it might be inside of a book. I know for sure I did not throw it away. So yeah, if I can find it, that'll happen.
Please keep on reading. Read us a couple more poems.
I'm going to read you the poem I wrote. That's a reversal of the night he died. And it's called Reverse Flip. And it was really difficult to write this. I mean, technically difficult to write this, surprisingly. But so this is an after poem. I don't know if you've ever written Matt or read Matt Rasmussen's Reverse Suicide.
I
That
haven't,
is.
but I don't think that me not knowing that poem detracts from yours.
No, it doesn't at all. But I guess I'm just dropping that because it's such a great poem. I want people to go read it. But so reverse flip. Each drop of water splashes before rising into the faucet. My phone lies silent at 2:30 in the morning. No reason to hear your brother's voice falter as he says your car unflips on that curve on Butternut. You won't die, and the officers drive past. They don't find you upside down, still alive. And your body is unbroken. Everyone sleeps in the quiet house. Let the wailing begin. I won't call your mother in the middle of the night, and she tells me she never closes the door on the police standing on her front steps. The moon shines bright on the road near the canal. Your eyes open all the way home. And when your drinking buddies call it an early night, you refuse another round. That cute waitress you've been eyeing all evening hands you her phone number. Thursday at your favorite watering hole. You're poised on the edge of the world, golden boy. Oh, how about I read the poem about the spirit entering me that you were
Yes,
referring to earlier?
and then I would
Yeah.
like to hear incidental poem, the
Oh,
title poem.
absolutely. If a woman's eggs had no expiration date. So, if a woman's eggs had no expiration date, I wouldn't have heard mine were past due at age 40. I wouldn't have had to put an ad for an egg donor, this cartoon baby with a single-haired curl, or been hit with a lightning response from an evangelical with triplets and a singleton under the age of three. I would never have known women existed. Willing to share their most precious gift, who would endure hormone shots and invasive procedures, all to help another woman fulfill her dream, fill her crib with a child born of this strange in vitro union. I wouldn't have had to grieve my self-image as luscious fruit that had passed from ripe to rotten, this grief that had to move into a deeper center, accepting of an older woman's body. And I wouldn't have given up when I bled after the first egg transfer, wouldn't have said, I can't do this to myself anymore. I doubt I'd have wondered at the ache thrumming thick in my core while I paddled the canoe on the Little Miami. Would I have been scared to take that pregnancy test when I got home? Would I have sat on the steps and held my belly before I went inside, more than suspecting? Would I have flashed back to the rush that had woken me a few weeks earlier, like some spirit had entered me as I slept? I wouldn't have held proof of this miracle, the white wand in my hand. The second purple stripe, my son growing in my last good egg.
I love this, and I love the image of the white wand as if you're a magician creating
Yeah,
something.
it sure felt like it was. I mean, it was just a miraculous thing. Would you like me to go ahead and read Incidental Pollen?
Yes, please.
Okay. So this is the title poem, and I've told you what it means. And I think it was after I put this collection together that I think I realized also what this had all been about. And I think for me, in a lot of ways, it's like I'm trying to find home or recreate home or a place of belonging. And this is reflected. Incidental pollen. I watched the bees re-enter the hive in sharp diagonals, laden with nectar, legs golden with furry pockets of pollen. There's no doubt where they belong, drawn as they are instinctively to home. I left mine as soon as I could, certain I would create a version with more belonging. Less belief that I was in the wrong place. But wherever I've lived, the same red bricks as my childhood. The farther away I moved, the more the wall encircled. In Amsterdam, music pulled me inside an empty church where I sat in a pew and listened to the organist practice a hymn. The tune I recognized, but the words I couldn't recall. It's too late now. Where I am absent, the sweetness accrues. I linger and feed there. It never empties.
It is gorgeous and very relatable. I mean, as someone who left home as soon as I could, I have this poem. It's called Photo of Going Away Party. Like your friends have gathered to send you away. They're at home. They feel confident. They know where they belong. And you're not sure. Just keep on packing the suitcases, moving from one place to another. I mean, it's not the same thing as in your poem, but it kind of like made me think back about my poems. I'll make sure I send it to you. The sharp contrast between the bees just being confident, going in and out, knowing where is home, and someone who is just going all over the world to find it. So to me, that was both relatable and sad.
Yes, I can imagine that that definitely speaks to you. You're back and forth, between your home country and here, right? You still go back, right?
Yeah, every
Still go
year.
back home. Yeah, that's what I thought. It must be very dis I mean in less in there are less miles in my journey, perhaps, but there is always that feeling that I'm never 100% where I'm supposed to be. I don't know where I'm supposed to be, and all I can do is write about it. And I don't know, home is maybe a it's something in your mind, something that don't know. It's a question for me because when I go home, I mean, my mother's still alive. My mother, she's almost 99. And I go
Wow.
back to my, she's still in my childhood home. And I go home, I sleep in my same bedroom, but I still, it just is just, I don't know what moment it is that I'm trying to recapture, but it's never going to happen. I don't know. I think that's part of maybe the restlessness of the human spirit, but.
But hey, there is a lot of incidental pollen along the way, isn't there?
Yes, there is. There definitely is.
Well, congratulations again, and thank you so much for coming on Accents to read poems to us and to answer questions.
Thank you, Katerina. Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate all you do for the poetry community.
I appreciate you too.